Daily news, breaking updates, and exclusive podcasts. iTricks.com.
Hello and welcome to the Magic Week in Review, bringing you news, rumor, and culture reports from the front lines of the magic industry. I'm Justin Robert Young, editor of iTricks.com, and in this edition of the podcast, we're getting a little FISM preview up in this piece. Yeah, I told you we were going to do two podcasts this week, and I wasn't lying. Joining us live and direct from Australia, he is probably someone I think has paid more attention to FISM, largely because of his organizational duties and helping to work out the last edition of it. Tim Ellis joins us for the first time ever. I mean, I think I've talked to you via email for 6 years since I've been doing the site. This is the first time I've actually talked to you on the podcast. Welcome.
It's so exciting to be here on the podcast. It's something I've always aimed to do. One day I thought, one day Justin will call me, and he has.
Yes, and here we are, folks. Before we get into talking all things FISM, let me remind you, TrickShotMagic.com is the only place you need to go on the internet to buy magic. You think you might need to go other places, other places might tell you, hey, listen, you need to go here. All of them are fibs, folks. TrickShotMagic.com is it. Best prices, best customer service, and a live chat feature to make sure you get what you need, not what everybody's trying to push on you, like some sort of two-bit hustler. No, no, no. TrickShotMagic.com is your friend on the internet, and you know, give them a chance to prove it. Head on over right now, TrickShotMagic.com. Tell them iTrick sent you, and understand why we say every single week, or this week twice, that they are bringing you the brick-and-mortar magic shop experience one click at a time.
And they've got all my DVDs really cheap, too. Cheaper than I can sell them. I can't believe it.
Can't beat that with it. Can't beat it. Can't beat it with a stick. TrickShotMagic.com. Tim, let's talk about FISM. First, here are the details. It's taking place in Blackpool, England this year, right?
Yep, that's it.
For those who are maybe younger, aren't quite up on the competition magic circuit, explain what FISM is and how often it takes place and what it means.
It takes place every 3 years, and it's like the Olympic Games for magicians. There are different categories that the magicians compete in. There's two main streams, stage magic and close-up magic, and each of those streams has got different categories, like there'd be general magic, manipulation, mental magic, card magic, and all these different categories that magicians will compete in. And you usually get 150 different magicians competing and 2,000 to 3,000 magicians attending and watching the competition. And it goes over about 5 days. It's very exciting, and it's a great opportunity for magicians who've never been seen anywhere else to get international exposure. And it's really managed to launch the careers of some of the great magicians around the world. Lance Burton, for example, when he won his FISM award, it skyrocketed him and catapulted him to his own show in Vegas, and the rest is history.
Now, you mentioned that it is not only a gigantic magic competition, it's also a gigantic magic gathering. It comes to England from the last time that it was put on, which is 3 years ago in China. It's a return to the, you know, the continent of Europe. Would you say, I mean, it certainly has a European flavor by and large. You know, what would you think the differences will be going from someplace that is not traditionally as big of a magic, you know, was I don't want to say a departure for FISM, but, you know, normally it's a European kind of competition. You know, from going from China to England, where in Blackpool, there's obviously the gigantic Blackpool convention, you know, every single year. What do you think the difference is going to be? Are there more magicians going to compete? Are there more magicians going to attend the competition?
Well, there's been this whole shakeup in the last couple of years that Eric Eswin, the FISM president, has been trying to do, which I think is a great thing. Most people say, you know, he's heading in the right direction, which is trying to make FISM a much more international event instead of just, you know, it's always been placed in Europe because it's been very convenient. People can, they can drive, they can take a train to almost any destination within Europe. Whereas when they had it in Japan for the first time in 1994.
Everyone's flying.
Oh, everyone was flying, and there's controversy, you know, oh, no, it's going to be terrible, it loses flavour. It was still a good convention, and, you know, it was an exciting convention with something very different. Then it went back to Europe, and we had a lot of fun in Europe, and then Beijing made a bid that was just outrageously impossible to beat because they had massive government support, and it was a good convention. It was much better than people expected it to be. It was quite an unusual event in some aspects, and it added a different dimension to it. But most importantly, it reminded people that FISM is international. It's all across the world. And so now we have countries from all around the world, including Asia, bidding for the next FISM in 2015. I know that Eric keeps saying, we've got to have it in Australia. We've got to have FISM in Australia. And it's like, oh, you know, there are people working on that to see if that's ever going to happen. But, you know, I think if it ever gets to Australia, then it's totally international. So the whole idea.
What about Cleveland? We have all these cities in America. We can just bring everybody out here, do FISM in America. Come on. We'll all get some ribs.
Actually tried to do FISM in America. They made a bid for it, and I think the bid was taken back. I think I think it was IBM and SAM combined to try and do a bid for FISM in America. I think that was going to be this year, and they decided it was just too complicated or too hard or whatever it is. Maybe it'll happen.
It was like a FISM feeder thing or something years ago. Yeah,
they did do that. They did FISM North America. I think that was last year. And that was
last year, 2 years ago, one of those two.
Yeah. Well, the whole idea of the new restructure of FISM is that the year before FISM, they have the, I think it's the Continental Championships, they call them. So we have FISM Asia, FISM Oceania, FISM North America, FISM South America, FISM Europe, and FISM Africa. I may have left one out. I've only listed six continents. There might be more. I don't know.
Yeah.
So they have all these feeders that are, you win the competition, and then you automatically get entry into FISM. And what they have the year before that, so the year directly after FISM, they have their local competitions. So you might have your, FISM Germany, FISM Singapore or whatever. And so you win those competitions, and then you go into the continental competitions, and then you go into the international competition. And it's a good system. It weeds out a lot of the bad acts that we've had in the past. So the standard is going to be higher, but it also does allow for established acts, very famous international acts who maybe don't have the time to compete in a regional event. There's a fast track they can take to go through and get direct entry into the competition as well.
What would you say the difference in judging is for a competition like FISM compared to what I'm sure many people who are listening to this have already seen, which is a competition at, you know, a larger, like an IBM or an SAM regional or national competition? Well, what is the difference judging from a judging perspective?
Well, I've judged all sorts of different competitions throughout the last, I don't know how long I've been doing magic now, but I've done the regional competitions and the club competitions, and of course the FISMs as well, and FISM not only FISM internationally but also FISM Asia and other FISM sub competitions. Generally, I always try to apply the FISM judging criteria because I think it's a very good system. You look at the different categories. You look at showmanship, technical skill, and you basically use those as guidelines to come to your own conclusion as to what the score should be. In some of the other competitions I've done, they've simply said, look, just list the acts 1 to 10.
Yeah.
You know, just say who you think is the best and who you think is the worst, and we'll leave it at that. You know, it does vary from time to time, from place to place. A lot of competitions in the early stages of a magician's career, you wouldn't push too hard on originality, you know, or technical skill. You might just go, you know, look, it's great that he just got up there and didn't fall over the furniture. I'll give him extra points for that. And so it really just depends on the standard that you're judging. I just came back from China where I judged the college magic championships they had there. And, you know, the standard was very different. It wasn't nearly as good as FISM standard. But these are just young students who are having a go. Some of them were doing amazing stuff. Some of them were doing very derivative stuff. And some of them were doing stuff that just defied explanation as to what on earth was going on.
Yeah.
But still, you know, they did a really good job. And I still applied the FISM criteria. But I did notice some of the other judges were giving, you know, like 9 out of 10 for every category. And I'm thinking, well, you know, that's great, but once you give the first act 9 out of 10, you know, if the next couple of acts come up and they're far superior, you've got nowhere to go.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let's get down to the nitty-gritty judging-wise. So you said there are several categories from which you assign X amount of points, and then you get a point total that then you judge, you know, that is, you know, judged against everybody else's point total as they perform. Can you give me, like, an average? Like, what is the scoring to? Is it at 100? Is it at a 50? Like,
It's out of 100, and I don't have my figures with me offhand. I always check this when I'm scoring, but I believe you need to score at least 80 to get a Grand Prix.
Okay.
70. I could be quite wrong here. I think it's either 80 to get a Grand Prix, 70 to get a first, 60 to get a second. No, I'm pretty sure it's up higher. It's 60 to get a third, 70 to get a first, 80 to get a Grand Prix. Oh, it's something like that. I should have researched, should have done my notes.
I know. Come on. You're supposed to be our FISM expert.
I'm not judging this year, so I've thrown my thoughts out the window. But the bottom line is that you have to get a certain score, and it's got to be quite high, because we had our FISM Oceania Championships here recently, and we gave out first prize for close-up and third prize for close-up. And then I think in stage, I think we only gave out a second or a third or something like that, because the standard just wasn't, the points just didn't reach FISM standard. And the thing is that you don't want to send somebody off to FISM who, you know, they might be the best in your club or your best in your organization. But to be honest, if you send them up on stage and they get red-lighted because they're not up to FISM standard, or the curtains close, or maybe they just get a terrible score and people are talking about, you know, oh, gee, that act was so bad. You know, it's better not to go. Just, you know, it's not like you don't enter the Olympic Games if you're not extremely fast at running, you know. You're going to go in 100 meters dash and you go, yeah, I can do the 100 meters in about, 2 or 3 minutes, you know, you go, well, I'll just watch. I'll work on my skills till I get up there. So it's something that you really need to really be, you know, you really need to be aware of the standard that's out there. And some of the acts are very, very high standard this year, which is great.
It seems like a lot of the scoring is kind of built so you can judge it against past acts that, you know, if you have to have, you know, X, Y, and Z to be, and real quick, before we get any further, describe what you mentioned. There's third prize, second prize, first prize, and then a Grand Prix. Describe what the Grand Prix is.
It's a bit complicated, I've got to say. I'm sort of being dragged into this new way of doing it. I'm still very, like, when I started judging, there was one jury for close up and stage, and there was one winner. And it was very simple and straightforward. But over the last couple of FISMs, they've split it. So there's two separate juries, a close-up and a stage jury. And I understand that, because it was quite arduous on most people to sit through 150 acts and decide which one out of that 150 was the best, especially when some people only were close-up specialists, some people were stage specialists.
Yeah.
So now they've split us all up, and so I usually ended up judging the close-up panel, the close-up section, and, you know, we'd sit down and we'd watch all the acts, act after act, and we would decide who was the best, you know, who got the highest score. And the way it worked was that the acts that had the highest score, I think it was 70 or so, they could qualify to go to the Grand Prix. 70 or 80. Oh, I'm terrible. Okay. 70 or 80. They qualify to go to the Grand Prix, and then they'd have a separate competition on the last day.
Who scored Grand Prix scores.
So the highest in the stage category would go against each other, and the highest in the close-up category would go against each other, and then a close-up Grand Prix winner would be announced, and a stage Grand Prix winner would be announced.
Okay. So it qualifies you for a final day of competition to see who is the best of the best of the best.
Yeah, and it's hard because, like, I remember there was an act, Pat Perry and Archibald, who did this amazing act where the curtains opened and you saw basically an overhead view of a card table. So they built their whole act on a wall, and they were sitting it's hard to visualize, but it's sitting on the side of the wall, and they basically played a card game, you know, with cards and guns and all sorts of things. They had this, like, old Wild West sort of scene, And it was hilarious. It was brilliant. And some people like, oh, there's not much magic in there. It was like every time they dealt a card on the table and it stayed there, you know, every time they poured a drink, that was magic. They were effects. But because we were looking at it from an overhead perspective, it looked amazing.
The fact that it looked normal was the magic.
It was fantastic, you know, and it was a great act. But like a lot of magic acts, it was based on the element of surprise. Everything that happened was so surprising. It was wonderful. So then everyone's raving about this act, and they said that they'd perform again. And it wasn't a perform in the Grand Prix situation, but it was a like they'd won a prize, they performed in the closing gala. And the curtains opened, everyone went, oh, yeah, this act.
Yeah.
And the whole surprise was gone. And the same happened with Scott and Muriel, you know, with their amazing Soaring in Half. That has a lot of surprises in it. And then everyone's talking about this act, and they go, oh, they've won the Grand Prix, let's see them. And they go, oh, yeah, they were better before.
Yeah.
It's just like bringing the same joke over and over again.
Well, stop making these people perform the same thing over again then. Just have them up on stage and let them wave.
If it was up to me, just once, I don't care, you know.
I hear you. All right. So we've gotten a good primer. And I'll tell you, I'm really glad I had you on here, Tim, because, you know, I've been doing the site for 6 years now, and I mean, it means we've covered two FISMs, you know, and I swear to God, I still don't know exactly what the hell goes on. So I'm glad, even if we didn't get the scoring exactly right, at least I have more of an idea of exactly how this thing takes place. Now, let's focus on this year's competition. But before we get into who's performing, let's pick up where we left off last with FISM. Who were our winners last year and the standout acts last year in Beijing when you were a judge for FISM?
Okay. Last year was very interesting.
Or last edition, not last year.
FISM. Yeah, last FISM. It seems like last year, gee. And the close-up gala, close-up competition was amazing because we're watching act after act, day after day. And to be honest, by the last day, we didn't have anyone who'd scored high enough to take out first place.
Sure.
And we're sitting there thinking, oh, you know, what's going to happen? You know, what will happen if we don't get anyone who's a good scorer? You know, there'll be no close-up Grand Prix for the first time. There'll be no Grand Prix, and we're not going to fudge the scores. A lot of people think, oh, you know, it's all political. It's not, absolutely not. There's so many judges, and they've all got such a wide range of experience. If one judge turns around and says, oh, I think so-and-so should be the winner, and the other judges don't agree, there's no way you can, you know, twist the system. It's a very much self-regulating system where the judges really keep an eye on each other. And even if, you know, somebody, I had a friend of mine competing, and I had to say to people, you know, just make sure I don't come across as being biased. And to some extent, when you've got your friend competing, you tend to mark them lower more than you like mark them higher. The funny thing with Boris and myself, Boris Wilde was the head judge. We would often just have this little game between ourselves where we'd both, as soon as an act started, we'd both write down a score, just what we think they're going to get.
Yeah.
And then at the end of the time, we'd look at what we'd written, and we'd both written exactly the same score.
That's
90%
funny.
Of the time. But then the funniest thing was it ended up being pretty much the same score we ended up giving them. So it was amazing the fact that within the first 10, 15, 30 seconds, you really can tell what the act's going to be like.
It's like a chapter from Malcolm Gladwell's Blink. It's amazing.
But there were exceptions. There were some people who come out and deliberately look really bad, and then, boom, wow, they're astonishing, or they have an amazing twist. But, yeah, it's amazing once you start to look at act after act after act after act, you can really tell whether they're going to deliver or not within the first 30 seconds. However, we get to the last day of FISM in Beijing, and up comes Sean Farquhar and Mark Oberon, who really stood out amongst all of the other acts. The interesting thing was that Mark Oberon did an act in close-up, which was very, very good, but it was more a parlor-based act. It was standing up at a table with large props. And so in the end, we said, look, we really, you know, we discussed it at length, and all the judges agreed. They said it really should be a parlor category. So we switched him to parlor category, and as a consequence, he took out the parlor category, and Sean took out the close-up category. And then they actually went and competed against each other in the big Grand Prix. So that they were the two outstanding acts in the close-up category. And with stage, there were a lot of interesting acts, but the stage outstanding act was no doubt the winner, Soma, with his amazing act with the phones and the slow motion and the paper that was torn and then came back again. You know, he had so many innovative ideas in there. There was no doubt that he was easily the standout act in the stage competition.
He's got a crazy mind. He's a crazy. He has that web series now on YouTube where just, you know, complete circus of psychosis that's going on in that guy's melon. It's amazing. He's an incredibly creative guy.
I chatted to him after FISM and I said to him, you know, that act was great. And he said, I've got a lot of other acts. And I said, really? He said, yeah, I've got a lot of other acts that are, you know, just as good. And I said, really, you should consider competing again. He said, well, I've just won the Grand Prix. I said, yeah, but you look back at history of FISM, there are only one or two acts who've actually won the Grand Prix twice.
Well, I'll tell you what. That
really make a statement.
That, my friend, is a great segue to my next question. You have all these people that have obviously, listen, magic competition means a lot of things to a lot of different people. Many times it's people who are younger, who want to kind of sharpen their skills and see what else is out there and get a sense of where they are in magic and to polish one act to the point where it's at a point where you could make a profession, you make a living off it, you know? Have there been anybody who have, you know, they win FISM once and they want to come back and win it again? Or is it something that you do it once and you don't want to come back?
Well, back in the early days of FISM, you had people like Fred Capps, you know, who won, I think, back to back.
How long has it been going on, by the way, FISM?
Since about the 50s, I think. Okay. I'm going to have to do a little bit of checking to give you the exact...
I'll look it up, but keep going. You're saying Fred Capps.
Yeah, Fred Capps, he won FISM and then he came back with a completely different act and it was, you know, just amazing stuff that happened. There's been very few people who've wanted to come back once they've won a Grand Prix, though. And I really think that's, you know, that's like the ultimate achievement in magic. The situation with Sean Farquhar was that I think I could be slightly wrong, but I think he came third at FISM and then he competed again the next time with pretty much the same act, came second and then came back again for a third time and finally won and took out the Grand Prix.
Yeah.
And so persistence does pay off.
Certainly does. Certainly does. It looks like 1947 was the first Congrès Magique International.
Lovely accent there too.
Oh yeah, Jesus, I know. You know, I just disappear into the cosmopolitan world of Europe.
And it was in Paris, I believe.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That was, of course, my Parisian accent, for those of you who couldn't immediately recognize it. Is there anybody, are we going to get a Farquhar or a Soma or anybody who made an impression to you when you were in Beijing performing this year at Blackpool?
Right. The interesting thing about it now, because of the competition where they have regionals and continental competitions, is you see the acts coming up. Yeah. I remember in 1994, I competed in Yokohama and Carl Cloutier had been winning all the awards all around America and everywhere, wherever he went, he'd win the awards. And it was funny because the situation in the close-up room, everyone's buzzing about, they're watching all the acts. All of a sudden, it filled up. Just people came from nowhere. They just jammed into the close-up room because it was Carl Cloutier was coming out to perform.
Yeah.
And so he did his act and then he finished and they all left again. So yeah. there's always rough. Someone everyone's ready to see. So there's always a fan favorite. And this year there are two people who are at the moment. If you're running a book, you couldn't make money on these guys.
So you know, prohibitive favorites.
Absolutely, absolutely. But this is the fun thing about FISM because I'm looking at the list at the moment, and there are a lot of people on the list who I have never heard of, and that's quite hard because I've heard of a heck of a lot of these people, but these are names that I haven't had before. And there have been so many times in FISM where somebody has come up who's no one's heard of and they've just made a huge impact. Yeah. And that's what I really like about FISM.
Well, give me those two names. Give me the two off the book names.
That's the big build up. All right. I can kill the big build up for you if you like.
What else do we have to build? What else do we have to build? Build us up, and then let's get to the names.
All right. I'll build up. I'll make it more dramatic. I can go through the categories, if you like.
Let's go. Category it up.
FISM has finally released the list of the competitors, and there are 97 acts in stage and 55 acts in close-up. Okay. And these guys come from like about 28 different countries. Sure. So it really is a very international event. They've actually got comedy magic as a category at the moment. It used to be there'd be a comedy prize for the funniest act. And they sometimes would give it out and sometimes not give it out because comedy is really hard to judge internationally. Because I remember seeing a Japanese comedy act who came out and did this act where he dressed as a urinal.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, everyone sort of, like some Japanese people laughing hysterically. They found it hilarious. Everyone's just sitting there going, right, okay. Yeah. So comedy isn't necessarily an international language, so it gets hard. However, in the comedy category this year, there's an act, Dre Zauberer. There has been an act from Germany called Die Zauberer, which has been very funny. They've done some really good stuff. Yeah. But I'm not 100% sure this is the same people. I think this is a different group. There's Abra Capella from Germany, Magic Tabs from Spain.
Is comedy magic? Is that its own category, like stage or parlor or close up?
It's part of stage this year.
Part of stage.
Yeah. So you've got to do it on stage, and they're judged on technical skill and handling, showmanship, presentation, entertainment value, artistic impression and routining, originality, and magic atmosphere. They're the categories that they're judged
on. Now,
and comedy obviously has to come into
hard,
it. It's
hard, but I mean, at least everybody is going to be playing to. They're going to be playing to an audience that is largely comprised of Western European people and black people, right? You know,
black people, And I had a friend, a guy here in Australia, Harry Houdint, who competed.
Look at that.
And, you know, his name, you're already laughing.
Sure.
Harry Houdint is a very, very funny comedy act, and he competed in 1994 in Yokohama and brought the house down, but not a lot of technical magic. You know, it's mouth coils, head chopper, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a tough one because you've got to still deliver the magic quality as well as the comedy.
Sure. All right. Well, here, let's go through some of the categories and then just name me who you, if we're starting our own little book here, who's the big, give me the big favorites.
The big favorite for comedy, I'd say, is Mikhail, and I can't say his last name, it's Szanyiel. He competed, I think, a year or two, FISM or two ago, and he does this very, very funny act as a conductor. A singer and conductor. He comes out like an opera singer.
Gotcha. Okay.
You may have seen his act on YouTube. It's a very, very funny act, and he did very well. He actually won, I think it was in, not Beijing, but the one before that, which I think was Stockholm, I think. He won a contract for London, which I think was given out by Paul Stone. And so he did very, very well from that, and it's good to see him coming back again. Yeah, that's my pick for comedy. General magic is really hard because there are 42 acts in the general magic category.
Okay, hold on, wait a minute. General magic, so is that part of stage?
It is. It's a subcategory of stage. Stage has comedy, general, manipulation, mental magic, and illusions. So you've got 90 to become the Grand Prix winner, you've got to beat 96 other acts.
Yeah. All right. So general magic. So by definition, that would be something that is just not what the other things are.
Yes, I know. It's
this is like the SATs. Holy crap!
It's sort of like, I guess these are the acts that are uncategorizable.
So what would you say? This is what do you normally see in this category? Is it experimental stuff? Is it a lot of hybrid stuff?
You see absolutely everything. And to give you an example, Latko from Argentina, who's a very good act, I performed with him at FISM Asia recently. He does an act where he produces all these different objects and puts them together and ends up creating a motorbike on stage.
Okay.
We've got is he
your favorite in general?
No. He's a very good act, but there's so many acts. I don't know if I can actually.
You can. You're on the podcast. Come on, step up to the plate.
We've got also Brynolf and Long from Sweden. That last year, they were recategorized to comedy magic, came in second place. I'm not quite sure why they're competing in general magic. I think they may get recategorized again. You might have seen them. I think they're on Sweden's Got Talent, and they did very, very well. You've had their clips on the podcast before.
I think they just did Britain's Got Talent.
Yeah.
They did Britain's Got Talent and Penn & Teller's show with the same act, but it was cut up in different kind of lengths.
Yeah, so and they did an act.
They
a tennis act. They had a tennis racket. I remember seeing it in Beijing, and they, you know, they were very, very funny. But yeah, I don't know why they've entered general. But I'm sure they'll do quite well. But they're not my pick for the Grand Prix. Matthew Gore from South Africa is a very good act. The South African championships they just had recently, and apparently the standard was very, very high. And there's also another act in there, Ted Kim. His name is really Taiwan Kim. But I'm going to go off on a tangent here, if it's all right.
Go.
Blackpool earlier this year had a show featuring Korean acts only. Now, I went to FISM Asia, and this was the second FISM Asia I've judged.
Yeah.
The standard was like night and day. The Korean acts have taken over the world. They are astonishing. But what was really sad for me was the fact that this blog reporting on the Blackpool event had a whole list of all the Korean names. And they were all out of order. So they'd got the wrong names with the wrong acts. And I made a comment, guys, you've messed up the names of the acts. These are the real names. And someone wrote, oh, who cares? I'm like, well, the Koreans care. You
know? Yeah, like, yeah. Well, yeah, listen, come on, Tim. This is like, it's Chinatown. Bloggers grew up. Believe you me.
It struck me as interesting because then a lot of the Koreans actually westernized their names. And so Kim has called himself Ted Kim. And I'm like, guys, you know, make us learn your names. Don't pander to us, you know.
Maybe one day.
Anyway, so Ted Kim does this astonishing act. I said to him, he's reinvented black art. It's like black art, but it's high-tech black art. I say it's like black art because, you know, when you watch a black art act like Omar Pasha, for the first minute or two, you're going, how the heck is this going on? And then you go, oh, I get it.
Sure.
I know what's going on. And you enjoy the act, but the mystery is gone.
Yeah.
So I said to him, your act is astonishing. You'll do fantastic in every event. But if you go to FISM, there's not enough magic in it. But just be aware of that. And he said, I understand that. But you will never forget his act. He comes out, he stands on stage, and he's dressed as a clown. And then his costume explodes and vanishes.
Damn. There's a hook right there.
If he just did that and then went on to a traditional magic act, but the thing is, then you realize after about a minute, like black art, you go, he's using 3D architectural projection on his own body.
Oh, wow. Well, I'll tell you don't say anything else. Don't say anything else. I think people are going to want to see it. All right.
You've got to see that. So he's great. And also,
This is still general.
Still, Jenna, and possibly also the best female performer I've ever seen, Park Ong-kyung. She calls herself EK on that's her anglicized name. She does an act as Carmen, and it's got a lot of interesting original magic in there and a lot of twists on the classics as well. But the thing that strikes me most is her personality, because so many times you see female magicians getting on stage and they're trying to be sexy or they're trying to be men or they're just not quite happening. But when she just steps out on stage, before she does any magic, you're just going, wow.
She's her.
You know, it's just she's playing the role and it's very, very powerful. And she got a standing ovation at FISM Asia. And I think she came second or third in stage, which is pretty good.
Tim, so this isn't like a 7-hour podcast. Let's get through some of the other categories.
So my stage one, I'm going to reserve judgment, but I think all of those people I've mentioned will easily get places. As far as first goes, I don't know who's going to come first in general. In stage manipulation, it's a what do they say? It's a mazir or something like that?
A mazir.
I'm trying to remember expression. It's a one horse race, basically.
There we go.
Yu Ho Jin. From Korea.
Okay.
If you haven't seen his clip on YouTube, I don't know where you've been. He starts off standing on stage with a scarf. He takes the scarf, folds it up, and it becomes a playing card. And then he just does the smoothest manipulation you've seen since Cardini. It's just absolutely brilliant stuff.
And so everybody else, if you can come near him, then you consider yourself a excellent outing in FISM.
If you're taking your money, you're not going to get any money on Yu Ho-jin. He's going to easily take out. The thing is, he'll take out the stage manipulation, but then he will then go to the Grand Prix, which means whoever has come second becomes the winner of the stage manipulation.
Gotcha.
And there's a few options in there, but there's so. I mean, he is so
far and away.
Yeah, it's the closest thing to art in magic I've seen in a long time.
Wow, I pray
mental magic. Mental magic, you want me to whiz through them? I'm going to whiz through them as fast as I can.
Wait, just give me, here's what I need from you. I need two standouts and a favorite.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll do that. Mental magic, I have no idea.
Gotcha. Then just any favorite? No idea?
Pretty good. I don't recognize a single name in the mental magic, and there's so many. There's 12 acts. But if anyone does take out the first prize in mental magic, it will be FISM history. No one's ever done it before.
Wow.
It's weird, but nobody's ever taken. It's become good though, because previously, as soon as mental magic came on, that was like your toilet break. As soon as a mental magic act came on a FISM, people would leave the room and come back 10 minutes later.
Yeah.
But now the standard is actually really lifted. People are doing really creative things in mental magic.
I'll tell you what. Talk about hard though. Like comedy's hard. Mental magic's got to be super hard for an international audience, right?
It is, absolutely.
So much talking.
Yeah. Illusions stage. That's the last category in the stage. Illusions. A cubic act, I think, is my pick for that one. You might have seen them on Penn & Teller's Fool Us. Okay. It's two guys with a box, and it's just very artistic and very puzzling and really creative. It's a French act called cubic. They'd be my pick for stage illusions.
Any other standouts?
There's Prince of Illusions. He competed in Den Haag and came second in the Netherlands. He's from the Netherlands. He does some amazing stuff, and there's a young duo. They were on Fool Us called Hijinx. They're from England. There's only a few English acts competing, which is strange.
Yeah.
But Hijinx.
I remember them. They were good.
Yeah, they're quite good. I think they'll do all right, but I think Cubic have got stage in the bag, illusions in the bag. Now,
right, Grand Prix? Who are you matching up Grand Prix wise? So obviously your manipulation.
Yu Ho-jin. Yeah. Absolutely.
Then that's it. You think it's in the bag. Lock it up. Stone cold lead pipe. Lock of the century. Yu Ho-jin. Prank Grand
Prix.
Unless
he puts that on stage and just has a seizure or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you what, that actually, I saw a guy in Mental Magic. He was doing like a chess act, one FISM. You know, you see everything at FISM. He's doing this chess act, in the Knights Tour.
Sure.
And he's doing the whole Knights Tour. And you could see. It was not going to work out the way it's supposed to work out.
Oh, no.
And he's going along, and you could see him starting to sweat. And he's starting to think, oh, no. And so he just faked a heart attack on stage.
Oh, good Lord.
he just went, oh, and dropped to the ground. And people like, okay, close the curtains.
That's one way to get out of things, huh?
It was the most bizarre thing I've ever seen. It was very strange. Anyway.
Close-up.
Three categories in close-up: card magic, micro magic, which is close-up, and parlor magic.
Gotcha.
So close-up magic is tough, but there's a guy I saw. We actually brought him down to Melbourne after FISM Asia. His name is Yu Hyun Min, and he's calling himself Zeki Yu, and he was
so
on a program.
I'll tell you what, from what you're saying, these are all Korean acts. I mean, like Korean acts are just dominating.
The Korean system at the moment is so amazing. There are magicians just doing magic 24/7. They are just constantly working and rehearsing and developing all sorts of things. I was over there recently. I did Ong-Yul Lee's TV show, Storytelling Magic.
Yeah.
And he said, can you do a guest spot? I did. It was an 80-minute guest spot on the show.
We had that up on the site. Korea, they're doing nothing but playing StarCraft and doing magic. That's like the only two things they do out there, making horror movies.
And the whole thing with Korea is they are so adamant they have to do everything better than anyone else in the world. You know those guys who hold up the car park signs that, you know, with an arrow pointing to park here?
Yeah.
I'm watching Korean TV. They have a competition to see who's the best at doing that. And so you've got guys throwing the signs up and juggling them and twisting them and tossing them behind their backs and stuff to see who's the best at holding the car park sign up. So whatever they do, they're so proud they have to be the best at whatever they do.
Well, they're so, whipping everybody else's behind here at FISM so far, according to the Tim Ellis handicapping report.
My handicapping system they are, so Huyen Min, he performed on a show called God's Hands, and he does this brilliant effect with signed cards where the signed cards end up in an envelope that's been sitting in full view all the time.
Wow.
And you swear, he does nothing. He does absolutely nothing. It's very, very high skill. He did this lecture. He's doing this lecture here in Melbourne, and he's showing a color change of a card. And it's one card with no cover, and it changes four times. And you're going like, okay, and then he explains it, and it's all sleight of hand. It's four cards being manipulated, and you're going, how?
Yeah.
The skill level's out of sight. And previously with Asian magic, the skill level was always very high, but the presentations were a bit weak. Now they've knocked that on the head, and they've concentrated so much on their presentations now. They're just as entertaining as they're skillful. So, yeah, I'd pick him. And in card magic, Olmec from France is very good. He came third in Beijing. And Shin Lim from Canada.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk about him. I haven't seen much of his stuff. I've heard a lot of stuff, but a lot of people are talking about Shin Lim from Canada in close up.
This is so card magic.
That's card magic. It's going to be an interesting category.
All right.
Micro magic is, I don't know, there's 19 acts. And to be honest, there's nobody really that jumps out at me in micro magic. But I have to admit, there's one Australian competing, Simon Coronel.
Sure.
And he came equal third in Beijing, and he performed as a guest artist and lecturer at IMX last year. And he's made a lot of impact, and he's doing some nice stuff. And I think he's got a chance. He's got a chance of getting something in micro magic. Yeah, he's got it. I know people say you're being a favorite because he's Australian.
Fine, be a homer. Yeah. It's okay.
Yeah. And also another name that caught my attention is Tango from Argentina. So I'm assuming this is the guy who makes all the coins.
Sure.
So it's interesting when you get people who are sometimes they're well known for one thing, but they compete in a different thing, and you go, oh, he's a great guy, but not much as a performer. I don't know. I've never seen Tango perform, so I'd be curious to find out what he's going to do. So other than that, everyone else in the list, I've seen a few of them perform here and there, but there's no one who jumps out at me.
Gotcha. Which leaves us with Parlor, right?
Parlor. And Parlor, strangely enough, I think is going to be one of the toughest categories this year. And we've got a lot of interesting acts in there. Some people who, like Chef Magic from Denmark, who competed last year and won a prize in comedy. We've got Hayashi. Hayashi is a brilliant act. He's competing from Germany. You never know what he's going to do. He's not only he does all his dangerous samurai stuff.
I saw him at Magic Live several years ago.
Oh yeah, he's just sitting on the edge of his seat.
He's got a bow and arrow and candle wax and a Segway, and who knows what the hell that guy's doing.
The best thing, he's actually really, really funny as well. He does great.
It was a well-done act.
Yeah. Johan Stahl from Sweden is very, very good.
Love Christian. Johan. He's my boy. Yep. He shared, when we were at the Magic Castle, me and Andrew, Johan was sharing the close-up room with us. But no, I'm rooting for him. So what? He's in Parlor?
He's in Parlor.
I'm rooting for him. Let everybody know. Everybody's listening to this. Let Johan know. I'm out and out. I'm in the tank for Johan Stahl.
He's the JRY pick. All right.
There we go.
And we've got Christian Navala from Finland, who's very good. Vincent Heiden from France, who's got some interesting stuff. But there's two acts that stand out here. I think one's going to take out the Parlor category, and I think one's going to take out the Grand Prix. It's Jeffrey Tam from Philippines.
Okay.
He's relatively unknown in the West, but very, very well known in Asia. He plays this old Chinese magician. The makeup is perfect. He looks like he's about 100. And he comes out, but he talks a mile a minute, and his magic is just all over the place until the end when you go, oh, and everything ties together. It's a brilliantly constructed, very, very funny routine. And he does this amazing stuff that no one will ever copy, where he produces like about 8 or 10 jumbo coins from his mouth.
Nice.
And they are all in his mouth at the same time. Somehow. I don't know how he does it. But he's a very, very funny act. I think he's going to go very well. But the winner, and, you know, this is just another lay down. That's it. Lay down, Mazir. It's another one horse race. Jan Frisch from France.
Okay. Now, why Jan? Why is Jan taking it?
Have you seen the video? He competed. He won FISM Europe. He does an act with a teacup, a teapot, I think it is, and a cup and a ball.
Yeah.
And it's like abstract magic. It's very high skill. It's very, very good storytelling. And it really is like taking magic to a different level. He's taking what has existed before and just turning it on its head and making it really, really interesting. And I've only seen the act on video, but people who've seen it live say it's so much better when you see it live. It's just him and his cup and his ball and just telling this amazing story of a guy who is totally frustrated by the magic happening around him. And people have compared him to Chaplin with his whole the way. Also, you know, so I would be very surprised if anyone can beat Jan and if anyone can beat Yu Ho-jin. But that's the fun of FISM, because you just don't know. You know, you can have the best act in the world can get up there and just fall off the stage and completely mess everything up. Or you can have somebody who comes out
of nowhere.
Yeah, look, years ago, 19, I don't know when, a guy from Australia called Sam Angelico competed. He was in Comedy Magic, and he's doing his act. And this is all secondhand story. I don't know. Yeah. I wasn't there. But he's doing his act, and it was going okay. But then somebody got up and wanted to leave to go to the toilet, and he just targeted this guy and started giving him stick and everything like that, and it became really, really funny. And it's like people are saying, you know, he had to share the award with that guy, because if the guy hadn't got up and gone to the toilet, it would have been just another act. But it just lifted the whole act. And because of the spontaneous comedy, it just lifted it right out. So you never know what's going to happen. I mean, we've had so many people, like every year there's at least one or two acts who set fire to the stage.
Nice.
You know? There's clips around the place of, you know, performers just on stage doing their act as their props gradually start burning and people
burning
rush on
the back of them. Jesus.
Yeah.
All right. I have one more question for you. Now, you've listed acts from all over the world, and you might feel compunction to be reserved about rooting for Australians. I have no compunction about rooting for Americans. Are there any American acts that have a chance to make some noise this year?
Okay. I'm going to go through the list and have a look to see American acts. Woody Aragon is listed as an American act, but I think he's from Spain.
Jeez, that would be
Andos.
Andos, Spain, Texas.
Spain, Texas. All right, okay. Yeah. Andos is listed. Patrick Pryzyski. I can't say that name. He's in Close Up. And
so none that you would think of, like, you know, have any kind of shot to make some noise.
I'm just looking. Andos is also in Stage Magic, and there's also in USA Lee Yong Woo from USA and Ruben Morland. So none.
Oh, Ruben! No, Ruben's a reader of the site. I know Ruben. No, Ruben. He's an iTrix favorite. Listen, there's going to be team iTrix favorites.
Yeah, all right.
And Ruben Morland is one of them, and Johan Stahl is the other. What is Ruben performing in?
He's in Manipulation.
Manipulation. And where's Johan? Is that in the same thing? Oh, no. Johan's Close Up.
In Parla. Yeah.
There we go. Ruben Morland in Close Up, Johan Stahl. Write it down. Those are the iTricks. Not iTricks, Justin. Just me personally. Justin Robert Young favorites. I'm giving them my blessing. I love both those guys.
And we'll know the answers very soon.
Indeed.
We will know. We'll know. Find out the
when
truth
does FISM
about it.
Happen?
I'm sorry?
When does FISM happen?
It's in July, and it is. I'm going to look up the exact, because this is July 9th. Because this is the first FISM. I am not going to.
Oh,
and this is so bad, because, like, I'm running the Melbourne Magic Festival, and FISM is taking place in the second week of our festival. Now, I can get, there's a lot of guys who are going, which makes our festival quite depleted this year.
So, the second week's going to be a little rough.
Yeah. Well, instead of having 150 performances in 2 weeks, we've only got 100 performances in 2 weeks this year.
Sure.
So we've got a lot of Australians going again over to Blackpool, and they're all, you know, obviously supporting Simon as he performs over there. But yeah, July 9, I think it is, July 9 to 14, I think the dates are, and. You know, there'll be a lot of buzz. I'd like to think that there'll be some sort of live podcasts or something like that going on to keep the rest of us up to date with how it's going. But there's not a lot of internet coverage in Blackpool, I hear.
No, it usually is. It's rough with the convention. We've had everybody. I think the only time that we've ever had any kind of live stuff from Blackpool is we can get Andy Gladwin to run out to a Burger King or something, and he can get on the phone and just tell me what the hell is happening.
I'll be tuned in. All my FISM news.
I'll tell you what, Tim, you might not have been able to head out to FISM this year, but you sure did us a great favor in coming on and giving us a good perspective, not only on the history of the competition, but also who could be the champ, the Grand Prix winner this year out at Blackpool. And do me a favor, listen, anybody's listening to this who is going out to Blackpool, I know we have a ton of people that, you know, read the site and listen to the podcast out in the UK. If you want to help us cover FISM, then officially this is the extension of us looking for FISM operatives out there who want to give us all the deets as the competition unfolds. Email me itrickstaff@gmail.com if you'd like to help me cover FISM.
And you should also, anyone who's listening to the podcast, put your tips down in the comments column underneath this. Put your picks.
The picks. Yeah, there we go. Especially if you're rooting for Team iTrix. I don't even know if they want to be on the same team or if we will accept my endorsement, but I'm going whole hog. Johann Stahl and Ruben Moylan for the win.
There you go.
Dubs. All right. Tim, where can people follow you on the internet?
I have my main website is australianmagician.com. That's got all my stuff for people who want to have me go to magic conventions and things like that. I've got a corporate site, timellismagic.com, and I've got another site, Magic Unlimited, which is where people book all the acts that we represent. But the best thing is if you want to Facebook me, Facebook Australian Magician, and also Twitter, tim.ellis.magic. So I'm everywhere.
He's everywhere, folks. Get a little Tim Ellis in your life. And Tim, take it easy with the with the online fights. I always see you getting into scrapes online, yelling and screaming in comments. You're a nice guy. Just take a deep breath. I know it gets annoying. Everybody on the internet scrapping and saying things. Just take a deep breath and move on.
I do. This 2012 version of Tim is the very mellow Tim, and I'm just sitting back and letting it all run over me and just letting everybody else fight for themselves now.
There we go. That's you're not the world's dad. You know, you don't need to be getting in, you know, pointing out who's right and wrong.
I know. I've been called the magic police before, but unfortunately, the magic police don't have a great deal of power. But
no, and the pension's terrible. So
the pension sucks. It's disgusting.
It is. It's just we don't have a lot of respect for authority figures in the magic industry. All right. Thank you very, very much, Tim. And again, I'll tell you what. You know, now that the podcast is going for all you listeners, if you want to go ahead and just email in thoughts on the podcast, if you want to respond to points that people make when they're on here, email us, itrickstaff@gmail.com. Maybe we'll, at the end of the podcast, we'll do a little mailbag feature where we'll read, listener comments at the end of each episode. I would love to do that. Until next time, remember, you can read all the news every single day. Pops up, do it the old-fashioned way, the way that Abraham Lincoln used to read about magic news on the blog, www.itrickstaff.com. Or if you want to be hip and cool like all the kids these days, follow us on Facebook by searching for iTrix, or follow us on Twitter @iTrix. Until next time, I'm Justin Robert Young, Justin R. Young on Twitter. Bang a gong.
iTrix.com.